Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You were listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. We have a lot to get into in today's show. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we're going to be joined by friend of the show, Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated. Coming up at 3 o'clock, so in exactly 1 hour, we are going to be joined by James Palmer of Bleacher Report. He does fantastic work covering the National Football League. We got a lot of stuff to get into. We got Thursday Night Football. We need your help. Are we calling Thursday Night Football the Unk Bowl, or are we calling it the Icy Hot Bowl? We got two quarterbacks who are both over the age of 40. You don't get that very often in the National Football League, so we are trying to figure out what the official name for tonight's Thursday Night Football game is. We're going to talk a little bit of college football. We got a lot to get into in today's show. We also have somewhat of an update about Josh Simmons. We'll get to that here coming up momentarily. But before we do that, I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. Number two, I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. I mean, it'd be great if you could tell two people to check out the show, but you know what? If you could just tell one person to listen to this radio program, I would greatly appreciate that, and I would appreciate you. And last, and this might be the most important, I need you guys to remember that the open of the show is brought to you by our friends over at The Other Place. If you're looking for a spot to watch the Unk Bowl coming up later today, maybe the Icy Hot Bowl, if you're looking for a place to grab yourself something to drink, something to eat, you want to hang out on a patio and watch a little Thursday Night Football, then look no further than our friends over at The Other Place, with five area locations sprinkled all across the Kansas City metropolitan area. So we have a little bit of an update on Josh Simmons. I don't know if I would consider this to be a major update, but it is something. Nate Taylor earlier today was on Fesco in the Morning. He'll be on our show tomorrow, so we'll get more of an opportunity to talk to him about this. Now, Josh Simmons did not practice yesterday. I do not believe he is going to practice today. I don't think that Josh Simmons is going to play this week for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I don't know if that's a day-by-day, week-by-week thing. He is not currently with the team. It is one of the major storylines right now surrounding the Kansas City Chiefs. Nate Taylor of ESPN was asked about this. This is what he said.
I do believe it's a family matter. I do believe, you know, Josh Simmons is back in like the Southern California, San Diego area, which is, you know, his hometown. You know, I had the responsibility yesterday not to ask Andy Reid, because I've done that already, but to really ask Patrick Mahomes, like, hey, man, have you talked to this guy? Patrick was very honest on Sunday saying he didn't know where Josh was. And that, you know, it's not every day the starting quarterback has to go to the coaching staff and say, where's the left tackle? And the coaching staff really doesn't have the best answer for your franchise quarterback. So when Patrick Mahomes said yesterday that he's praying for Josh Simmons, I think we all need to take that cue from the quarterback. And, you know, I'm fearful, I guess, is probably the best way I can explain what I've heard.
I've told you guys that I'm not here to speculate on what it could potentially be with Josh Simmons. I don't think that is responsible. I trust Nate Taylor's reporting as much as I trust anybody's reporting. He says it's a family matter. I do think there is a measure of respect that should be shown to a person's private life, a person's family matters, and when they feel like they are ready to talk about this and discuss this, you have all the freedom and latitude to do that on your own time. This is the one question I'll ask about this, and maybe your answer is they don't owe us anything, which is a fair response to this. Why didn't the Chiefs come out and say that in the very, very beginning if that's what it is? If we are talking about that Josh Simmons is away from the team for the next 9 days, give or take, to deal with the family matter, it feels like releasing a statement at the very beginning of the week that all parties agreed to would have ended this conversation from the very, very beginning. But they have allowed conspiracy theories, they have allowed rumors, they have allowed people's opinions and ability to kind of run wild with this thing. And in some ways, it has taken a life of its own. If it is a close personal family matter, that can be a wide range of things. If that's what it was, I don't know why the Chiefs just didn't release a statement. Josh Simmons releases a statement. We see athletes do this all the time on their Instagram where they type something up. They then screenshot it. They then post it. I'm dealing with a family matter right now that has caused me to be away from my team. When things have resolved itself, I'll be back playing the game that I love. I feel like at least some of the fire, I don't think the fire is out of control by any means, but I do think that some of the conversation about this would have ended on Sunday if that had been the case. Some of this conversation would have ended on Wednesday if the Chiefs had released that statement when it came to Josh Simmons. So at least for me right now, I think the story is somewhat put to bed. Now, we do need to ask the question of when he is going to be back. If it's not going to be this week, is it going to be next week against the Commanders? That feels like a conversation that we can resume on Wednesday when the Chiefs get back to practice. But if you have not practiced on Wednesday or Thursday, I don't think you're going to practice on Friday. I think it's safe to say you are not playing this week. So let's reset. We'll be back next Wednesday when the Chiefs have a Monday night football game. They have a little bit more time, a little bit more time off to take care of your business and potentially come back and get back to playing football for the Kansas City Chiefs. So it is obviously a situation that we are going to monitor with Joshua Simmons. But if Nate Taylor is saying that he believes it is a family matter, I'm willing to leave it at that. I think that is the right thing to do. I think that is a very fair thing to do when it comes to Joshua Simmons. I was wondering this, and I was talking to Rob today as we were getting ready for the show, kind of looking ahead to Sunday's matchup against the Las Vegas Raiders. I was wondering this. I said, Rob, what is the Chiefs' record since the Christmas Day loss a couple of years ago? You guys remember, I would say now it's somewhat of an iconic picture. It is Taylor Swift in a Santa hat. It is Brittany Mahomes in a Santa hat. And they just look like the Grinch came and stole all of their Christmas gifts. Hey, what was the Chiefs' record at that point? I had just forgotten. The Chiefs were 9-5 going into that matchup on Christmas Day. And they got really handled by the Las Vegas Raiders to the point where the Chiefs got booed at home on Christmas because of how poorly they played. The Raiders in that game scored a defensive touchdown. That is about as bad as I've seen it in the last 18, 24 months, however far you want to go back. And it was almost like the Chiefs needed that loss to kind of refocus themselves, and they have been on an absolute tear ever since. So I saw Rob, he went over there, he was typing away at the keyboard. Since that Christmas Day loss, the Chiefs have gone 20-5 since then in the regular season. They were 9-5 heading into that matchup, 9-6 leaving that matchup. I don't know what was going on with the Chiefs at that point. Very up and down, very inconsistent. But it almost was like a turning point when it came to this team, this organization, and putting them on this path where they have been the best team in the National Football League, give or take. Maybe you want to argue it's been Philadelphia for the last 18 months of the NFL calendar. So, Rob, as we turn the page on the game from Sunday night against the Detroit Lions and we look ahead, I think we have to kind of go back just a bit to that Christmas Day game as a real turning point for this organization where the Chiefs were kind of at a, hey, what kind of team are you going to be? I also think it was very, very important at that stretch for the Chiefs. If you remember at the time, they heavily leaned on Isaiah Pacheco. They had Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice really started to develop and blossom. And the Chiefs, along with that defense, really rode those three offensive players, really rode the defense up to that point and stopped turning the football over and really focused in. And then went undefeated the rest of the way and then won 15 regular season games last season. We talked about a team that was could have potentially gone one way. And we have seen a lot of organizations, when you kind of meet that fork in the road, go one way. It feels like in some ways that's kind of where Philadelphia is right now as an organization, where things can go one way or the other. That Christmas Day game is a very important game in Chiefs history, where I don't know what sparked in the Kansas City Chiefs, but they became a very different organization after losing that game on Christmas.
I have a couple more stats just if you want, because after that game, if you include the postseason, the Chiefs are 26-6 since that game, with a Super Bowl championship and two AFC titles. 26-6. I remember that day on Christmas Day. It felt like it was going to be a coronation. Hey, everyone's opened their gifts. They're sitting around, you know, the fire. It's a nice day in Kansas City. Arrowhead's full. You know, Taylor Swift is there. We've talked to Patrick Mahomes since it. They had a, you know, Christmas party planned at the house after the game. It felt like, oh man, the Raiders are just chum and the Chiefs are going to move to 10-5, and everyone felt like, here we go again. And Aiden O'Connell didn't pass for a single yard in the second half, and yet the Chiefs lost. But 26-6, if you include the postseason since that moment. I think you said it perfectly. There are forks in the road, and you either go left or you go right. The Chiefs use that as a "this is never happening to us" game. We're never getting embarrassed like this. We are going to refine our focus, our energy, our fire, whatever, and never let that moment happen again. A lot of teams, that moment crumbles them. The Chiefs, it appears, to have brought them closer together.
Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Matt Berdaram of Sports Illustrated. A lot happening right now in the National Football League. We'll cover the top stories and also get you ready for Week 7 Chiefs and Raiders. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by a friend of the show, Matt Berdaram, to go through some of the top stories right now in the National Football League. Matt, it's been a while, man. How have you been?
Been good. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Let's start with this. Two things. We asked Patrick Mahomes this. We have to ask you this as well. Number one, what is the word that you struggle with spelling? My word is convenience. I have no clue how to spell convenience. I just try to get close, and I let spell check take over. What's that word for you?
That's funny, because I would give you the same word. That word, just every time. I try to spell it different every time, and every time I'm wrong. Convenience, just psycho is another one, too, that, like, I know how to spell it, but if I'm typing it fast, anything like psycho, psychology, I always end up, like, mixing, like, one of the letters up the wrong way.
One last of these kinds of questions. Who is your favorite fictional football player? Mine is Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights.
I'm literally in the middle of watching Friday Night Lights again. I mean, I've seen it before. I'll give you a different one. Tim Riggins is a great call. Man, fictional. I mean, I'll stay in the same ballpark. I'll stay with Smash Williams of the same show. We got the backfield covered.
Okay, no, absolutely. Are you more of a Lila Garrity or a Tyra Collette type?
I mean, Can't really go wrong, but I'll go Lila.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure. You got to ask these kind of questions. I love the show, so I just got to always check to see where you are when it comes to this. All right, a lot to get into. Let's start with this. You're very plugged in when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs. What are you hearing regarding Josh?
Honestly, there's not a lot out there. I've done my due diligence. I've poked around. I've texted with some people. And, you know, I think that the basic word has been – there's a lot of uncertainty. Now, to be honest and to be very transparent, this is something that's it's a personal matter with Simmons, and anybody you're going to text in and around the team is going to be very cagey with this, and understandably so. you know, everything that we know is, like, he left on Sunday morning, went back to California. It's reportedly been a family matter. I don't have any reason to believe that's not true. But obviously he's still not back in Kansas City. I think the big question right now, and I don't know the answer to this despite trying to find out, is, you know, how much of this are the Chiefs aware of? Like, how much are they, you know, how in communication are they with Josh Simmons? You know, do they know the full extent of whatever it is that's going on? Because I think, you know, at least, especially in the beginning of the week, there's kind of a question of, like, how much do even they know? Now, listen, that is obviously something that can change minute to minute, hour to hour. They may have a full picture by this point. But, you know, they're supporting him. They're obviously working to get him back with the team, but it is a personal matter that at this point that there's not a lot of clarity on what's going on.
Why didn't the Chiefs just come out and release a statement like that from the very, very beginning if it's a family matter? So that is what Nate Taylor is reporting. That's what he's hearing. It's a family matter, which is certainly correct. Understandable. You don't have to do a press conference to explain something that's going on with your mom or your brother or your sister. I think most people respect that. But I feel like the Chiefs have kind of let this kind of cloud of mystery circle around this story when you could have just came out, said it was a family matter. And I think a lot of the questions would have went away until Josh Simmons comes back.
So I'm actually going to go a little bit different here, but kind of in the same realm what you're saying. I actually think his agent's done him a disservice. The agent should have said something, put out a statement. He's rep by a big agent. Like, I think you put out a statement saying, if you're the agent, look, you know, Josh is dealing with a family matter. He's in California. You know, timetable for return is unclear, but, you know, he'll be back as soon as, you know, it feels ready or it's resolved, however you want to word it. I think the team is hesitant to do it because, you know, you don't want to say something that the player feels is insensitive. You maybe also don't want to put the player in a position where you feel like you're airing out any of his business. And if you're having, and I don't know that this is the case, but if they're having a hard time communicating with him or they were, then also, you know, you don't want anything to get misconstrued. But look, there's no question that the lack of communication about what is going on has led to a lot of people, understandably, trying to connect dots and speculate. Look, I think that can be irresponsible at times. Also, it's human nature. And, you know, right now, I mean, he's been playing at a Pro Bowl level. He's a first-round pick. He's a left tackle for Patrick Mahomes. That's going to be a story. He's not the 53rd guy in the roster. He is a starting left tackle. So, it's an unfortunate situation. You hope he's back soon. You hope everything's okay. But, yeah, I mean, the lack of communication on the agent's part, the team's part, has left a lot of speculation to be had.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam about the top storylines with the Chiefs. We'll get to some of the national storylines here coming up in just a minute as well. I've really tried to stress this week that I'm curious to get your thoughts on. I don't think Jalen Moore is getting enough credit for what he just did on Sunday Night Football. I think it would have been certainly understandable for him to not play on Sunday. He had a baby earlier in the day. He hasn't been playing, hasn't been getting practice with the ones. It would have made a lot of sense for him to just be on. He is with family. For him to not only leave his family, but come play at an incredibly high level, and look like he's going to start this week, that takes a consummate pro. I wanted Jalen Moore really highlighted this week for doing this when I think there's a lot of players in the league that wouldn't have played on Sunday Night Football.
There's no question. Jalen Moore deserves a ton of credit for everything you just said, Karen. Like, he had a child, you know, I mean, his wife had a child in the morning, and he played that game with really no notice. I mean, the Chiefs did not know who was going to be the left tackle until a handful of hours for game time on Sunday. I mean, it wasn't like this was something going into the weekend. They knew. They didn't have any clue. Josh Simmons was just gone Sunday morning. So they had to figure that out, and they're asking a guy who just had the birth of his child that, hey, man, you had no first-team reps, as you point out. Go out there and play. That is an extremely, extremely difficult thing to do. I mean, he played no left tackle reps in training camp, none in the preseason. They put him out there. Obviously, of course, he played there for San Francisco in limited action while he was with the Niners. To go out there and be asked to guard to block Aiden Hutchinson, and do it mostly on an island, And to hold up the way he did, yeah, I mean, that, look, I'll tell you one thing. That is going to earn him an immense amount of respect in that role. You're going to have guys in there who are like, that guy is somebody I want in my foxhole. Because you're talking about, you're right. I mean, a lot of guys would have just said, hey, look, my kid was born this morning, you know, and maybe even if they played, they wouldn't play particularly well. For him to come in and play like that, oh, I don't think there's any question. That is something everybody in that locker room is going to respect the hell out of Jalen Warren for.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam with the top storylines right now with the Kansas City Chiefs. We had Mitch Holthus on the show a couple of days ago, and I asked him, what does it mean for the Chiefs offense to get Rashee Rice back? And he said, it's like adding Deebo Samuel to an offense in the middle part of the season. Now, Deebo, I think, is a little bit on the high end, but I think the sentiment is, I don't know if there is a team in the league that is going to add a player of this caliber in the middle of the season in the entire National Football League. When you take an offense that is trending in the direction that Kansas City has, and now you give them potentially their best offensive skill position player, we're talking about a team that could potentially be top five offensively by the time the year is done.
Oh, look, I mean, Rashee Rice is the best weapon on the team. Xavier Worthy is great. Hollywood Brown, Juju, they played well this year. No question. Tyquan Thornton's played well. And, of course, Kelce, to his credit, is, I mean, hell, he's tracking for nearly 1,000 yards. But this is the weapon on this team. There's no doubt. He was on a monster pace when he hurt his knee last year. And I think if you look at the Chiefs, look at the last 3 weeks. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but you know, they have averaged over 30 a game. Yardage totals, I believe, are something like 411 on average for the last 3 weeks. Well over 20 first downs on average over the last 3 weeks. I mean, this is a team that they're operating right now as a top three offense in the last month. And now you're bringing this guy back. Look, this to me, as long as they can continue to block, whether it's Moore or Simmons at left tackle or regardless, whoever it is, as long as they continue to block the way they're blocking, and credit to Kingsley Suamati, who has been awesome the last three games. If they do that, they're going to score a ton of points. I mean, there is nobody stopping them from throwing the football. They have too many weapons. And not only do they have weapons, but they work together in tandem really well. And that is something that I think maybe gets a little underplayed. You got Worthy, who can run kind of not the whole route for you, but he can do it. He can do the short game. He can do the long game. You know, then you've got Hollywood, who can certainly run deep, but also has more of an intermediate route game. Rice kills you on the intermediate game. That's where his bread and butter is. And then Thornton is the ultimate deep ball guy. It's like, you got a lot of guys who can just stretch you horizontally, stretch you vertically, and catch the ball, beat you man-to-man, beat you in zone, beat you with speed, beat you with size. It's a lot. And Rice is the best of all of them. Like, I think this is the first time since 2022 when Mahomes won his second MVP where when I watch them offensively, I just expect them to score. I don't care where they are on the field. My thought is they're going to score a touchdown, and it's bared out the numbers. Only the Colts have scored on a higher percentage of their possessions. The Chiefs are scoring like 52% of their drives. That's a crazy number. They've been in the red zone 17 times in the last three games. So, you know, look, now you add Rice back to that, yeah, they're extremely dangerous.
I was asked this question on an interview, and it was a very interesting question that honestly I hadn't thought about. The question was, on Sunday Night Football, did it mean more for the Chiefs to score 30 points or for the defense to hold an offense like the Lions to 17 points? I said it's the offense because I think their offense just over the last, I would say, year and a half has been kind of middle of the road. And this is the first time that we've seen in a while that the Chiefs could potentially have an elite offense. The Chiefs have been top five defensively, it feels like, for 2 years. That hasn't been the case with the offense. So I think the story is more about the offense. What side are you on? Do you think it says more about their offense or their defense, how they performed on Sunday night?
I think the offense, because of kind of to your point, look, they're regaining a confidence they maybe haven't had the last few years. And scoring 30 and doing it as easily as they did, not stunting that growth, so to speak, I think is key. I will say this, though. The first two drives, Detroit scored 10 points. Third drive, they moved it a little bit. They get that fourth down. Then you know, they got pressure, and the throw's low. I mean, Amon Ross St. Brown, I think, would tell you he should have caught the ball, but it was low. He couldn't come up with it. The whole game changed after that. It's 24-7 the rest of the way. Detroit scored 7 points on its last six drives and averaged 4.2 yards per play on those last seven, those last six drives. That's elite football defensively. And it didn't feel like an elite game defensively. And I think part of that's because early they didn't play particularly well. But, you know, long term, one thing about the Chiefs this year, it's funny. If you look at their numbers, their rush defense is not ranked highly. And a lot of that is because Justice Hill ripped off like a 71 yarder in garbage time. If you take that out, all of a sudden their numbers are actually pretty good. They shut down a Lions team. They run the ball against everybody. They didn't get 100 yards in that game. They shut down Saquon Barkley earlier in the year. I think it's important for the defense, but I think I think what you're saying, like, I agree, the defense has that confidence about them. The offense needs to keep playing that way, and I think that was a big confidence boost. Primetime, got to win it. They hung 30 on the Lions.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated, just getting his thoughts on the National Football League. Matt, you've covered this league for a long time. Have you ever seen as much parity as we have right now? I mean, I feel like we say this every year, but this really bears itself out. You could argue right now that the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC, even though they are ranked third right now in their own division, and they would be outside of the playoffs if they started today. They currently have the eighth best record of any team right now in the AFC. It just feels like that's one of the things. You take a team like the New York Giants, for example. The Giants in the same week could lose to the Saints and then turn around and beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I've kind of said it where I think there's eight teams that are already eliminated from the postseason, and then there's 24 teams that your guess is just as good as mine.
I think by the end of the year, it'll kind of shake out like it usually does. But I will say this. I can't remember a year where you look at it and just go, man, the playoffs, like, I have no idea. Like, I have no idea who is better than somebody else. Now, I will say, I think it's fascinating, and this has got to be a first. Maybe it's not. Maybe somebody can fact check this. Has there ever been a team that's 3-3 that's a betting Super Bowl favorite? Has that ever happened? Like, that feels impossible. They're not the favorite, like, oh, somebody put them number one in their power rankings. They're the favorite on DraftKings. Like, there's this, and Mahomes is the favorite to win MVP, and they're 3-3. But I think it does speak to a few things. It speaks to the lack of quality of a lot of these teams. The Eagles have not played well. The Bills are 4-3. The Bills have played the easiest schedule in the world. They beat the teams they've beaten are combined 3-21, and they can't stop anybody. They're an absolute sieve. And it's, you know, you look at it and just say, well, if the Chiefs get right, I think this is why the betting markets are what they are. If the Chiefs get right, who's beating them? Who's doing it? Because the upside of that team is just massive. Now, in the NFC, I really like what Tampa's doing. They've overcome a lot of injuries. Detroit is still a really, really good team. I think Philadelphia, look, they could certainly get right and get well. But it is a year in the NFL where, yes, you look around and go, I don't know. I mean, you know, what style do you like? What team do you think is the most growth potential? But it's crazy for a team like KC. 3-3, and you look at them and you're like, yeah, they got a really legit shot to be the number one seed in the conference. That normally would never happen, and that is absolutely the case right now.
Matt, keeping it in the AFC, are you a believer in the Indianapolis Colts?
I'm a believer in the Colts from the standpoint that I think they're well coached. I think Adam Romo's a terrific hire on the defensive side. Steichen knows what he's doing offensively. And look, I said all offseason, I wrote about it, I reported on this. The Colts went out and got Daniel Jones for three reasons. He's accurate, doesn't turn the ball over, and he's got a legit amount of mobility. Those are the reasons, okay? Those things have borne fruit. He's been accurate. He's only thrown, I believe it's three picks. And he can use his legs. He can keep you honest with his legs. When you have those three things in a Shane Steichen offense, you're going to at least be effective. And Anthony Richardson, look, I think the reality was just wasn't accurate enough. When you're completing 50% of your passes in 2025 in the NFL, it's just not going to happen. It's not enough. I don't think, though, they can win the Super Bowl or even get to it. Like, Jones has been good, and I respect that he's having a real renaissance in his career, and that's great for him. They're not, in my opinion, good enough to beat the Bills in the playoffs, beat Kansas City in the playoffs. Like, I think they could. Anybody else in the conference, you can make the argument. Like, could they beat Denver? Yeah. Yeah, they already beat Denver this year. Could they beat the Chargers? Do they play on Sunday? Yeah, they could. But I think as the season goes on, that offense, I mean, they're scoring right now like 61% of their drives. I mean, most years the leading team is right around 50. They're not going to continue that. Their schedule also gets much harder. I do think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're a Super Bowl team.
Moving it over to the NFC, I mean, this is the first time in a while that I have no clue who the best team in the NFC is. I think it's Tampa Bay, but we're talking about no Mike Evans, no Chris Godwin. It looks like Emeka Egbuka, he's going to miss some time with an injury. We're talking about their 1 through 3 wide receivers are potentially out for this thing. The Lions, who do they have healthy in their secondary? You mentioned Philadelphia. They don't look right now. Like, if I ask you right now who's the best team in the NFC, I feel like there's potentially 5 different answers on who that could be.
Yeah, there is. You're right, Carrington. I think I picked the Rams to beat the Bucs in the NFC title game to start the year, and I'm going to stay with that. I will say this, though. Tampa's been incredibly impressive. They're missing the 3 receivers you mentioned. They're also missing Jalen McMillan, who had 8 touchdowns as a rookie receiver last year. He's been out with a neck injury all year. They've been missing Bucky Irving, who's got a foot and shoulder injury right now. Tristan Wirfs didn't play a good chunk of the start of the year, left tackle. They're missing guys on the interior of the line. The question I have with Tampa is, look, I believe in that offense, especially when they're healthy. I think they're going to score a ton of points. Baker's been awesome. He would be my MVP right now with Mahomes close second. The question for me, though, is can that defense, when they play really good teams, can they stop anybody? Like, to this point, they played a Niners team with a bunch of injuries and Mac Jones. They played the Jets, who are the Jets. They played a Texans team that's great defensively but can't score a point. They played Atlanta, who apparently, unless they're playing the Bills, aren't good. But if they play the Bills, they can gain 500 yards and a half. That's the concern I have with Tampa. You know, when they played Philly, Philly lit them up, at least in the first half. Second half, they didn't complete a pass, but they scored over 30 points. The concern, you know, and then on the side of the Rams, just can you stay healthy? Nakua's already hurt. Stafford, we know what his back was like this summer. Can he last all year? Defensively, I love their front 7. Can those corners, can they hold up in the secondary? The NFC, I feel like there's a lot of teams that, to your point, like, yeah, they're interesting. There's also a lot of questions. I like the Lions a lot, but defensively, can you hold up? It felt like the Chiefs just did whatever they wanted to do in that game. Now, I get they're missing guys, but also, too, like, it's not like they're missing all pros. They're getting guys back, we're fine, but they're not getting guys back, we're going to alter and shift everything. I like the Rams still. I still think the Rams are the cream of the crop if they can get right, but it's a big if. There's a lot of question marks about all these teams.
Matt, can you tell me why Mike McDaniel still has a job? Because, I mean, it seems like it is absolute dysfunction down there. Tua said, I mean, it honestly is one of the worst quotes I've ever heard a quarterback give. He didn't even clean it up very well. Mike McDaniel, it feels like we're wasting our time, that he's going to be fired before Halloween.
I agree. I think the reason he hasn't been fired yet is Stephen Ross is probably just sitting there figuring it's a lost season anyway, and we're just going to ride this out for a little bit. And then I would imagine Anthony Weaver, the DC, is really well respected by in the organization. I would think he'd be the interim if he wants to be. But look, that's a mess. Like, if you know, I think a lot of people have looked at New Orleans and said, like, oh, they're the fire sale team, and they could be. I mean, Olave and Shaheed and guys like that, sure, Kamara. I got to tell you, the Dolphins, there is a for sale sign on the front of that building. And if you make an offer, I think you got to do Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, Devon Achane. I think you got to give a lot to get Achane, but I think you could. Waddle, no, because of his contract. Obviously, Hill would have been gone, but he got hurt. That team, they will get rid of anybody not nailed down. I mean, they need to regroup and rebuild. Tua is probably going to be there next year, because if you look at his contract, it can't really move off him before that. But, yeah, that – look, I thought he'd be the first coach fired this year. I remember writing that this offseason. I wrote it again after they blew that lead to Carolina, and then the Titans decide to fire Callahan, which, listen, that makes plenty of sense. He was atrocious. But, no, I don't think McDaniel's going to last even another month. That day's coming.
That is our guy, Matt Verderame of Sports Illustrated, joining us on the show today, going through some of the top storylines with the Chiefs and also the National Football League. Matt, great stuff, man. We appreciate you as always.
You got it. Anytime.
Absolutely. That's Matt Verderama, Sports Illustrated, popping on the show today. Coming up on the other side, we'll ask you guys the question. Let's go back to Sunday Night Football. Does it mean more that the Chiefs scored 30 points against the Lions, or does it mean more that they held the Lions offense to 17 points? We'll go through it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Watch the show on YouTube by subscribing to the 965 YouTube channel. The Drive, brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 965, The Fan.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in about 5 minutes or so, we'll talk about a story that just continues to come up. But we're asking this question right now. I went on with my guy, Andrew Filippone, and he asked me if it meant more that the Chiefs scored 30 points on Sunday Night Football or held the Lions to 17 points. And honestly, I had not thought about it through that perspective. So I'm going to read you two texts, and they're on opposite sides of this thing. CDOT, I think it means more that the Chiefs scored 30 points. The defense has been elite for some years now, but we've been waiting for the offense to come around. Someone else says it means 100% more for the defense. The Lions offense was healthy and full of weapons. It's not like the defense that was missing starters, so I think it's a big deal for the defense. That's what I think makes it a really, really good question. I'm going to side with the offense here for this. I think their offense right now, for the first time in 2 years, seems to have a real heavyweight punch. I think for the first time, the offense really has the ability to put somebody on their back when I don't think they had that the last couple of years. I think one of the reasons why the Chiefs played so many one-score games last year, why so many games went to the wire, is their offense didn't really have the ability to put you away. I think they can do that right now. I think when the Chiefs are up 7 and their defense forces a punt and they get the ball back, I think the Chiefs can go down the field and score and make this a 14-point game that can put it out of reach. I saw them do that against the Lions on Sunday night. So I think that's the story. I think you can look right now and say every facet of their offense has improved from week one to now. They've gotten better quarterback play. Now, they've always had great quarterback play, but you understand. Mahomes' last 4 games, he has played at an MVP level. They are running the football more effectively. It's still not a great rushing attack, but it's certainly better than it was the first 3-4 weeks of the season. Their wide receiver room is more complete than it was in week one. Travis Kelce is playing well right now. And their offensive line has really found cohesiveness with or without Josh Simmons. So I'm looking at the offense right now and the development, and now you are scheduled to add your most dynamic player to that offense. At least for me, the answer is the offense. So that's what I'm siding with. Them scoring 30 on the lines. Where are you at, Rob?
You know, it's funny. We see this differently. I think the answer is the defense. I understand everything you're saying about the offense, and I don't want to make it seem like it's 100% defense, 0% offense. I think it's like 51-49, so I agree with your point on the offense, but I lean defense for this reason. The defense has been a little bit up and down this year. We talked in that first week that they got embarrassed by the Chargers. Then they locked up. They played well against the Eagles. They played well against the Ravens. They played well against the Giants. It felt like, oh man, the defense has turned a corner. They're back to being the defense we thought they'd be. And then the Jacksonville Jaguars, who you're the one who always tells me Trevor Lawrence is not that good. And I don't disagree with you. They scored 30 plus on you. Like the Jags. This is not Mark Brunell and Jimmy Smith slinging the ball around. This is Trevor Lawrence and, you know, Mr. Drops, Brian Thomas Jr. They scored 30 on you. And a play in that game had fans, media, everyone questioning the effort of your defense, specifically one defensive player. And then in the first quarter, the Lions looked like, hey, they're the best offense in the NFL. The Chiefs could be in trouble. But then the defense locked in, and that is the best offense in the NFL, I believe, in the Detroit Lions. and they held them down. Matt Burton had a stat. Their last six possessions, they scored 7 total points. That's unheard of for the Lions offense in 2025. So I think the defense is more important because I feel like this was a step toward being a more consistent defense, and they did it against the cream of the crop offense in the Detroit Lions.
Someone just texted this in. Guys, I think this is the first year that both the offense and defense can be elite, and this could possibly be the first year where I feel we have to worry about special teams. I think that is a legitimate argument. Now, Dave Tobe had a press conference earlier today and essentially said, we're going to figure this thing out, and when the games get most important, Harrison Butker is going to be Harrison Butker. I would say that Harrison Butker right now is one of the few things that you're worried about. Now, maybe you would argue it's pass rush, but I will just continue to maintain this. They had their chance to fix the pass rush in the offseason. You are just not adding a quality get-to-the-quarterback pass rusher in October, early November. That's just not how this thing works. Teams are just not letting those guys go. Not on sale. You're paying a premium if you're going to go get somebody that can go get after the other team's quarterback. So right now, if you're looking for areas in which I think the Chiefs could possibly improve, you can improve at running back. We'll see if the Chiefs end up making a trade. They've been linked to a couple of running backs. You could technically improve at kicker, but they also, they have the highest paid kicker in the National Football League. So I don't think the Chiefs are bringing in another kicker. Like, outside of running back, I kind of think this is the team that the Chiefs plan on rolling with. Now, an injury could possibly change things. But if you're asking me right now, if the Chiefs don't make a move at running back, where else do you see them making a move? I just don't see them making a move anywhere else. I think this is the team.
I could see them bringing a Melvin Ingram type of pass rusher. Remember that? I think it was 2021. I think it was the other Austin Bengals. Remember, they brought in Melvin Ingram for like a 6th-round pick. Melvin Ingram was toiling away with the Steelers that year, because that was the year Mike Tomlin had the quote that they want volunteers, not hostages or whatever. And the Chiefs brought Melvin Ingram in. They added to their pass rush. It wasn't a high acquisition cost, all those things. I could see that type of addition on the defensive line.
Yeah,
but you're
I just
right.
don't
Nothing
think
premium.
That player. I just think if you're adding that kind of player, and I'm with you, I think that would be the kind of player that they would potentially add. Melvin Ingram had 1 sack with the Chiefs in 9 games. He had 1 sack. Now, if you're saying, could I see them adding somebody who we hit the breaking news sounder and people get all excited about, and then when he leaves, we then look at his stats and was like, he didn't really do a whole lot. I mean, that was Terrell Suggs. I mean, I remember back when Terrell Suggs was available, and every team that was decent that year put in a waiver claim to go get Terrell Suggs, and the Chiefs just ended up winning the waiver claim. Terrell Suggs didn't really help this team. Like, I'm saying, like, to me, there is not a single realistic player that the Chiefs could trade for that you think bumps them up a letter grade with wherever you think their pass rush is. If you think their pass rush is a C-, there is not a single move they're going to make that's going to get their pass rush to a B- or a B. They can go from somebody that gets them from a C- to a C, but I think that's as high as you could potentially get when it comes to that position. Teams are just not letting go a guy that can wreak havoc on their defensive line in November, especially when you have to assume now with how many good teams or competitive teams there are in the league. I mean, right now it's a buyer's market now at this point, or I guess a seller's market, because there's so few teams that are completely out of it, and there's so many teams that are going to convince themselves that one wide receiver, that one corner, that one pass rusher could be the thing that creates a separation between you and the rest of the league.
I mean, to be fair, doesn't that same thing exist at running back? Like, for an impact guy. Like, I know the Jets stink, and everyone thinks the Jets are going to have a fire sale. But it's not like the Chiefs are going to be the only team to call the Jets about Breece Hall. Like, that point about everyone being kind of in the wash right now and that parity reigning supreme.
I don't see any scenario in which they go get Breece Hall.
I was just naming up.
I'm with you. I guess I just know Breece Hall is going to be a very popular player that gets named, and that's why I say that. I mean, Breece Hall is owed a contract at the end of this season. So I'm just asking you guys, do you guys see a scenario in which the Chiefs, in theory, are going to have to overpay for Breece Hall because he's a very productive running back, and then they're going to pay him in the offseason? And you know, I've been banging the drum for running back as much as anybody. I don't think they should go trade for Breece Hall. That time has passed when it comes to that. Now, if you go get the kid from Miami that you can get for a 6th-round pick, that's a failed 1st- or 2nd-round player, and you see if he's got a little bit of juice for you, then that's perfectly fine. But why trade additional draft asset, a 2026 pick. Just use that pick to go get your own running back next year. You didn't like any of the running backs last year, even though it was a very productive class. Maybe there's somebody, and they're going to need to go get a running back this offseason anyway. They got three running backs who are all on one-year contracts. Pacheco's contract is up, Kareem Hunt's contract is up, and Elijah Mitchell's contract is up. They're going to have to go running back shopping anyway at the end of the season.
I agree. My point was just this. And you're right, I don't think they're going to get Breece Hall either. I think that running back, Jalen Wright, by the way, is his name, for the Dolphins, is a viable thing. My point was that with so much parity in the NFL, I think the price tag on every available player is going up.
I agree.
And that includes, like, Jalen Wright. Now, maybe he goes from you need to give up a sixth to you give up a seventh. But the bad teams, the dregs of the league, the teams that are having garage sales, are going to get calls from everyone. Like, using running back as an example. Do you know who else is running back? The Chargers. The Chargers are making the same phone calls the Chiefs are right now. So if you're the Jets, if you're the Saints, if you're the Dolphins, I'm making you pay a premium because now there's a bidding war. So I think that parity works with less teams are offering players up, and now because of that, there's a higher, steeper price for the ones that are available.
Yeah, I'm seeing this right here. CDOT, they can pay Breece Hall because they're letting all the running backs go. I mean, I don't know why we would think after an offseason in which it was one of the best running back classes ever that now the Chiefs in 6 months now really value the position where now they're going to spend a third round pick and give $12 million to a running back last year. Like, we can't go from a zero to 100 real quick, and that's what we're talking about. Like, trading for Devon Achane, if I'm Achane at the end of the season, I'm asking for a new contract. I've been one of the 10 best running backs in the league for the last 18 months. I'm not playing next year on a mid-round pick, draft pick, when I was picked in the third round. So, no, I don't see some of these guys being realistic picks because of the acquisition cost to go get them and then how much the second contract is going to cost for some of these guys. I just think some of the running back conversations, that ship has sailed. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by James Palmer of Bleacher Report. Keep it right here. So, Drive.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.